Welcome to our new show, the What Anyone Can Do podcast with Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Our new show picks up where the last show, Year of the Peer, left off, highlighting the simple truth that who you surround yourself with matters, and that if we enlist the support of others, give back to those who give to us, and pay it forward for the next generation, we can do anything. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari and I will interview a diverse group of thought leaders who will share stories and insights that will help you succeed in business and in life. How? By doing the things anyone can do, but most of us never will. Welcome to another episode of What Anyone Can Do, the podcast. My name is Randy Cantrell. He is the star of the show. It's his show, Leo Battari. Welcome, Leo.
It's our show, Randy. Thank you very much.
It is our show.
No,
and that's a point. That's a point to be made as well, but I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
Surround yourself with matters. Don't forget that.
That's right. That's right. Leo is in New York City. I guess you're still in New York City.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's been a really great trip. I spent some, I had a bunch of meetings, had particularly a couple of good ones, of course, yesterday, one with Dan Hoffman from Circles, and that's, you know, always great. And also spent a little time with James Orsini over at VaynerMedia, yep, and of course, he's now the president of Sasha, which is a, you know, a terrific business where they're basically, you have the resources of Vayner that can serve as a consultancy to small to mid-sized businesses that I think is a very powerful resource for people. So, you know, the other thing I'd love to do is have Dan Hoffman actually back on the show, because there's so many things that have advanced with regard to Circles and the things they're doing and the possibilities that are opened up on that platform that I think are really extraordinary. And a little later today, I'm going to get to spend some time. Jeffrey Hazlett and I are going to get together and, talk about some things going forward also, you know. And one of the central themes in many respects when we've been in the conversations I've had on this trip is this idea that there's a lot of executive development, a lot of learning and development that takes place in companies all over the country and all over the world, quite frankly. And I think when you consider the expenditure, which is in, you know, in excess of $100 billion worldwide, I don't think any company would accept the low level of return on investment for that kind of spend that somehow we tolerate, you know, in the learning and development area. And I think in large part, it has to do with the fact that it's not that the content isn't great or the speakers or the trainers or anything isn't great. It's that we don't have any mechanism to really be able to bring this stuff forward, you know, to practice and implement, you know, a lot of these amazing ideas. You know, we've got fewer people today doing, having to do more work in less time. And once they get back from training, they're so busy catching up on what they missed, being out for a day and a half or 2 days or whatever it may happen to be, that now all of a sudden they're just trying to get back in the flow of things. And there's really nothing, you don't have oftentimes peer groups inside companies that can sit down and say, hey, there's this one idea that could be a game changer for us. How can we work together to make sure that we can make it part of the way we work going forward? And so, you know, I think it's a powerful idea, and it's something that it's how this notion of group dynamics can play into teams that I think can translate into, I think much higher level of ROI when it comes to, you know, the spend. And I think as learning organizations, which I think companies have to be, particularly in this fast changing world, you know, we can get a lot better at it quickly, and you don't have to spend any more money to do it, you know? So, anyway, so that's just kind of a bit of an aside, but certainly a recurring, you know, theme of conversation with a lot of the folks that I've been speaking to while I've, you know, been in the city. But actually, what I want to talk about today a little bit, and you and I chatted about this, because we were very fortunate to have Dr. Diane Hamilton on our show just prior to the release of Cracking the Curiosity Code. and which is her new book. And of course, the subtitle is The Key to Unlocking Human Potential. And, you know, now that I've read it and really enjoyed it, it's kind of fun maybe to just talk about it a little bit. And I want to do that, but I also want to set the stage for some guests that we've got coming up as well, which will be Brian Solis and Rich Colgard. Brian Solis just finished Life Scale, which is a wonderful book. It's basically how to live a more creative, productive, and happy life, right? Who doesn't want to do that? So we can get into that a little bit. We're going to have Brian on the show to obviously get in depth on it. And then Rich Colgard wrote a terrific book. In fact, I have it right here because I'm traveling with it. I've not finished it yet, but it's called Late Bloomers, The Power of Patience in a World Obsessed with Early Achievement. And it's awesome. And by the way, it's a great book for us, right? So yep, we exactly. now believe that our best work is ahead of us now. This is not something that, oh, if we didn't do it by the time we were 30 years old, that, okay, life is over. So it's really great. But, you know, I think with Diane Hamilton's book, I mean, just think about this notion of curiosity. And, of course, I have some notes on some of these, which I'll be referring to, which is fun because one of the things she talked about is, like, what's the difference between the people who take toasters apart and the person who just wants toast, right?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, it is amazing, and it is incredible how curiosity becomes the fuel, you know, for our learning. I mean, I guess I you know, if I were to ask myself, how am I curious? And I guess, well, I'm really curious about a lot of things, and I'm not at all curious about other things.
Right.
How about you? When you think about
that? Same. Well, same thing. I was thinking about the other day. It's why do we like what we like and dive so deeply? You know, music and cartoons have been kind of passion since I was a kid. I don't know why necessarily. You know, but I've gone down so many rabbit holes. You know,
yeah, it's fun, right? And the deeper you dive into it, the more you want to learn. Well, first of all, the more that there is to be learned. That's what's amazing. I remember one of the first times that I really experienced this was when, you know, I had always loved to go to dinner, even as a young kid, and I would see these wine lists, and I'm like, God, someone went to a lot of trouble to put this together. I have not a clue what's happening here, you know, like where these wines are from or what they're about or anything like that. But, you know, you start going into the topic of wine, and the more you start to dive in, the bigger it gets, you know, and it's been fun, and I've enjoyed, you know, learning about it for decades now, and it's been great. But I think there are so many other topics the same way. I used to tell people that when I was doing the doctoral coursework at Northeastern, the more you dive into a subject and the more you open up to all of the scholarly research that's been done about it, it's just unbelievable. So I basically said I'm getting stupider by the day because right. you know, I realize how much more is out there than I've ever had the opportunity to look at. But, you know, she talks about it in I think, a really interesting way. I think this notion of curiosity and what it means, and actually talks about the things that keep us from being curious. And she uses the acronym FEAR. Which is essentially, FATE, excuse me. So it's FATE is the acronym. And it's basically fear, assumptions, technology, and environment. And as you might imagine, you and I have talked many times about the importance of environment, right? When you're around curious people, you'll tend to be more curious and do that. If you're not around curious people, you're not really as into it because, you know, you just don't want to be that person, you know? And I think she, I mean, reinforces this idea in that regard, that who you surround yourself with matters, even when it comes to the things that we are, you know, curious about, how we approach things.
It's, the first thing that hit me, you know, with that list was assumptions and just all the faulty assumptions that we make. And you have said it many times that gap of information between what we don't know, we just make up our, fill it in, and more often than not, it's totally inaccurate. So.
Yeah, it would help sometimes if we asked more questions and provide more answers. And I think this is really what this is about. I don't care if you are in a job interview or if you're leading a company. You know, in my view, you want to be the person who is really regarded for asking great questions, not the person who can just deliver a slick answer. And I think the more that we ask questions, the more that we discover opportunities, the more we're able to create and innovate. And, you know, she talks a lot about curiosity and its relationship with things like intelligence or leadership or engagement, and particularly what you mentioned regarding assumptions, right? And why we go through that, and time and time again, why we make assumptions, you know, only to be proven wrong most of the time, you know. But I think finally too, if you remember from the interview we did with her, she talked a lot about the Curiosity Code Index that she was putting together,
right.
And so you'll see that in the book, and I think it's just a really terrific. It's a good read, you know, and part of, you know, what I also wanted to mention just regarding these books as a threesome here, if you will, is first of all, they're very related, but also it kind of got me to that place where I really felt like I've been writing, speaking, doing all this stuff to the point where I'm thinking, when was the last book that I finished? You know, how many articles a week am I reading? Am I spending the kind of time making sure that I'm learning as much as, you know, putting information out there? And so it's one of those little checks that I go through every once in a while. I'm sure we all do, where we're like, man, we need to like make sure that we're taking in information and not just kind of because this, and you know, these three books in particular that we'll talk about have, you know, just really inspired me to want to read more. And including, by the way, there's the fourth that we've talked about at a course too, when we had Jeffrey Hazlett on, about The Hero Factor, another great book. And the fact that I'll get to see him today, and we'll get to talk a little bit about what that is and what that's about. And, it's just such a great thing. And now it's got me thinking, all right, what's my next book that I want to read, not the next book I want to write. And right. So, yeah.
Well, and there's this connectivity too. There's this connectivity of other people who are hopping down their own bunny trails, researching certain things and into certain things. And I mean, you kind of derive, I mean, the fact that Diane went down this trail of curiosity helps all the rest of us with our own, just because she's doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And there's something to be said about being curious about curiosity that would make you open this book.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But no, it's great stuff. And, you know, sometimes surrounding ourselves with the right people isn't always possible to have the people physically around us, but sometimes we can surround ourselves with their work. And I think that can be really helpful and really inspiring as well. And the more that we do that, and the more that we seek out those people who have shared interests, who have shared understanding and knowledge and insights about topics that we're curious about, you know, if you will, makes a big difference. And, you know, one of the interesting things about curiosity, it's kind of a nice segue into the next, book I want to talk about. And it's the one I'm basically in the middle of right now, and that's Late Bloomers, right? So The Power of Patience in a World Obsessed with Early Achievement. And, you know, because one of the things he talks about, the six strengths of the late bloomer, and one of them is what? Curiosity. And it's fascinating because he basically says we're like super curious as kids, right? And then we probably go through that period of adulthood where we just, life's flying by and we're busy and we're doing all this other stuff, and then we can get curious again, you know, later. And he just talks about it in the whole thing in a way that, you know, we're all about, you know, he'll describe, for example, that when we're younger, it's all about getting to the next grade or high test scores or achievement and all these other kinds of things, you know. And when we think about late bloomers, are more about curiosity and creativity and insights, and it's less about success and more about influence. And you know, this idea that oftentimes, you know, as we've talked about many times, it's kind of what keeps us going is the idea that our best work is ahead of us. It's not something that we reflect on in some
right.
morbid kind of way, you know, but, and that we maintain that outlook. But I think part of what it's a message on a lot of fronts, whether it's to our education system and whether it's to employers today. Any employer, I think, who's concerned about hiring anyone over 50, should really look at this book and be thinking that as so many CEOs and business leaders are saying that they are finding it difficult to fill positions with the right people. If they are not considering these late bloomers as part of their consideration set, they're missing a huge opportunity. And I think that's true for late bloomers. I think it's true for ex-military or people who've left the workforce or, yeah. I mean, there's a whole host of, categories, if you will, of people out there who are too often dismissed, for whatever, crazy assumptions, if you will, that people have about, that group of people. And yet they're not taking advantage of this incredible, and especially I think, people who are, it doesn't mean that they've lived in the past. Oftentimes these people are more curious today than they've ever been, and they're open and they have the experience on top of it. So why wouldn't you want someone like that as part of your organization?
And, well, it's certainly, I don't know about you, but it has certainly been the arc of my life. I mean, the kind of the early discovery curiosity, I'm not going to say that it went away, but boy, it was greatly diminished during some really hard charging mountain climbing day.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
For me, but boy, over the last decade, it's completely come around full circle.
Yeah. No, I think it's completely flipped. And so I think late bloomers, again, I look forward to, of course, finishing it by the time we have Rich Colgard on the show. What's great is it's as you might imagine with his position, as basically a publisher, and a futurist at Forbes, his access to people and stories and research and all, it really comes together in this book, I think, in a very powerful way. So, I've enjoyed reading it quite a bit. Rich is a wonderful man. I've had the opportunity to spent some time with him on several occasions, and really enjoyed this work. And what's nice when it's someone you know and you can really hear in his voice and his way of his speak and the way he thinks about the world, I think it's a really terrific terrific read. And finally, I definitely want to give a nod to Brian Solis's recent book, Life Scale. And like I said, it's how to live a more creative, productive, and happy life. And like, who wouldn't want that? But I've never read a book in my whole life where it starts off and he's telling, being very vulnerable, telling a personal story about where he is in his life in terms of his relationship with social media and technology and how, quite frankly, debilitating, that's been. And it's not a slam against any of those things. It's more or less time to kind of check ourselves in terms of what's our relationship with all of this. And are we focusing on the immediate and all these distractions versus what's really important and what can make us really productive? And I've never read anything where I just read through that whole first section and I'm like, man, that is me to a T. I mean, I had to look at the cover and make sure I didn't write it myself. It was amazing. And I don't think it's just unique.
It's probably a lot of us.
To me or you or someone, at our age either. I think a lot of people would fit into this category and I think can really self-identify with a lot of the struggles we have of trying to, I think that for myself, I was so interested in learning and trying to integrate this technology into my life and all of these tools and all these platforms that all of a sudden now you find out they're it's the tail wagging the dog in a bit. It's like, whoa, and it just gets out of balance, I think, in many respects. And, if you haven't read, and I say this generally to the audience, not to you, a lot of his other books, there's something almost, the level of effort that's put into the book itself from a design standpoint and the way it's constructed is exhausting actually to look at. I think to myself, oh my God, the time it took and the care it took to create what he does is worth, its weight. And whatever you pay for that book, you really feel like, wow, I got my money's worth and then some, not just because of the content, but because there's a, I think there's a certain part of his brand that is really about putting a level of effort and creativity and really about communicating, you know, to people effectively, that is really, really great. And I think what he's doing is kind of helping us regroup and really focus on what matters. And he not only says that this is a pretty good idea, but he shows you very specifically how to go about that process. You know, for that reason, I think that it's a, not only a very worthwhile read for anyone at any age, but I think it also will make you even more acquainted with Brian and feel like you've got a relationship with him when you're reading this book. And if you haven't read some of his other books, you'll be quickly thinking, I think I should do that. Because yep. if that's the level of effort he puts into, you know, what he does, and it, and that kind of quality emerges from it, that's the kind of stuff I want to look at. I mean, I really, you know, when we talk about who you surround yourself with matters, and again, I've been very fortunate to get to spend, you know, a bunch of time with Brian Solis as well. And, you know, he's a wonderful man that I think has been a great influence on me, certainly in terms of how he approaches things. And, you know, so I kind of aspire, you know, to doing, you know, more of that, because I think, you know, it's just really great to watch him work and see what he does.
Yeah. Well, I'm surrounded always by these people that I've, many of whom I've never met, and many of whom I have, but I'm thinking as you know, as we kind of wind down here, just in book talk in general, I mean, you're looking at three books, you've got hard copies. I mean, it's under $100. I mean, is there any bigger value on the planet when it comes to content, you know, and us connecting with people, even if it's done, you know, however you want to describe it, by a book, but you're able to benefit from three individuals who've done a colossal amount of work, a colossal amount of research, and have a viewpoint. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to agree with everything, but just, it's pretty amazing that for such a small sum of money, it's kind of coming full circle to how you began the conversation about implementation, that you can spend so little. The big investment is your time, but there's value in that, as we know. And I think a lot of folks are beginning to realize just the time that you spend with a book to just ponder it and let it sink in, as opposed to just the clickbait headline reading that we tend to do on our phones every single day.
You know, and it kind of goes back to this idea of when I mentioned the recurring theme that we have is this idea of here are the things we learn, and because we don't have a mechanism for implementing it, you know, we not only don't have a mechanism for implementing it, we don't even have a mechanism to understand it at a deeper level so that we can make it part of how we think. You know, so much of what we see online today, and I think, you know, another thing too, is everyone wants the red pill or the blue pill. You know, they want the magic bullet. They want the three tips for this and the five tips for that. And in most cases, we kind of discover that that's not life, you know, and, you know, certainly not in a way that's sustainable or behavior changing. It's much more about having a deeper understanding and working with other people to do that. And I think about this on two levels now, and you've got me thinking about this idea of, so if we took any one of these three books and we put a half a dozen of us in a room and who have all read it and we're all prepared to talk about it, imagine how much better we would understand the content of that narrative, right? After that, after spending 2 hours together. Also, think about the fact that because there are thousands of options out there for things to read, you can put a half a dozen people in a room who might choose three different books, and that second person would choose three other books, and they're all, so now they're bringing those, that knowledge and insight into any conversation you have about anything. And you really start feeling the value that people bring to the table because of what they were curious about. You may not have been curious about it, but they right. were. And then they bring something to light, and all of a sudden that becomes something that enlightens you in many respects. So I think this idea of how do we, you know, and I think it's part of what we're talking about all the time, is how do we encourage people to work together more often, more effectively, in ways where they understand that the group or the team is always more powerful than any individual on it. And when we tap into that, there's something magical about it. There's something extraordinary about it. And, you know, whether it's, you know, a company's ability to actually deliver real ROI as opposed to the unacceptable, I would imagine unacceptable ROI that comes from, you know, most learning and development programs at companies around the world, to, you know, just the myriad ways that, you know, we can work together and to our benefit. Yeah. Good stuff.
Well, I'm a hockey guy, but, you know, here we are, we're going to begin round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know.
That's right. My Boston Bruins, man.
Yeah, your Bruins made it. Yeah, my stars are still alive. But, you know, you've seen a number of wild card teams, wild card being we just got in, right? We just got in the tournament versus 1 and 2 seeds, which have clearly been the best teams, best players season long. And a number of these lower seeded teams have knocked off, including last night. You know, you've got the Stanley Cup, the defending champs get knocked out. The Capitals losing overtime last night. And it's interesting to watch these coaches and the language that they use. And, of course, they all say many of the same things. But it gets down to the will to win and the will and determination to look at the guy on your left and the guy on your right. And it's just – it's kind of a fascinating exercise in humanity of
hey, the Tampa Bay Lightning,
what will do.
Tampa Bay Lightning got swept. I mean, no one ever saw that coming. I mean, or at least I certainly did. Maybe certainly.
Definitely Sidney Crosby's Penguins. Yeah, Sidney Crosby's Penguins got swept. You know, so it's just point being, it's talent isn't always what wins, but boy, the collaboration of a group of people who might be lesser skilled but are just digging hard.
Well, I remember, you know, of course, dating myself, but, you know, years ago, Larry Bird used to always talk about the fact that he said, I can tell you who the best team is at the beginning of the season. And I can tell, you know, in terms of personnel and who they've got, whatever. But that doesn't mean they're going to actually execute and do what they need to do. And, you know, there are times where I've, you know, you've seen undefeated teams lose in semifinals and things like that in tournaments. And you're like, man, you can't believe like they were the best team all year long and somehow they're not competing in the final game. And I remember one time, and it was not even in context of sports, but Joe Grimaldi, who is the former CEO of Mullen, basically talked about the fact of it's more about earning the right to be there. And so the teams that make the finals, whether you think they were the best team or not, or whether they upset somebody or whatever, they earned the right to be in that game and compete for a national championship or a world championship or gold, whatever it happens to be. And there's something to be said for that in terms of teams coming together. And this is where I think championships should be considered the reward, not the goal. You know, the goal should be about how do we get better every day? How do we help each other realize our potential as individuals and the way we work together as a team? And when we do that, that's when championships happen. And I think too often times when in the company context, when we're focused on the bottom line and we're not focused on what it takes to actually realize that bottom line, things get out of balance and they get out of whack and we start making cuts and we start doing things that really have nothing to do with that, with our ability to be productive. And, you know, I think that that is, something. By the way, I want to give a shout out to, Mike Meyer, who's been doing a lot of our social media work over the past several months now. And one of the things we talked about yesterday was doing a What Anyone Can Do Minute of video. So sometime soon, I'm going to go through, I'm going to pick a, you know, dozen or so different topics from What Anyone Can Do that represent clean takeaways. But so it's 1 minute. And you're going to get it a dose of that. Now, I don't want it to be these aren't always magic bullets and things like that that I kind of all think should come with a warning label for the most part that other people are doing. But I think it does. My hope is that it gives enough of a snippet and gives a bit of a takeaway. But what I want more is that people will say, hey, I want to take a deeper dive into that content. I want to express,
right.
I think, the level of curiosity that's talked about in all three books, whether it's Life Scale, Cracking the Curiosity Code, or Late Bloomers. Curiosity is ever present in all three of those books. And it is part of, you know, what continues to allow us to grow. So if those little minute pieces aren't decided to be the answer, and the it's not the red pill or the blue pill, but hopefully it's something that gets you thinking about, you know, a topic in a way that makes you want to take a little bit of a deeper dive into it. So so I've got to run in and do a few more meetings today before I fly back to California, but good conversation, three great books. Very excited, of course, that we had Dr. Diane Hamilton on the show, and we will have Rich Colgard and Brian Solis coming soon, and we'll be getting those scheduled, and we'll get them here, and we can get deeper into this. So we could start.
Yeah, and we'll put links to all these books in the show notes. You can find that over at the website, leobattari.com. That's LEOBOTTARY.com.
All right. Well, on that note, you have a great day. And
thanks.
Stay curious.
To learn more about our show and what we do, to submit questions to us, and to subscribe to What Anyone Can Do podcast, please visit our website, whatanyonecando.com. What Anyone Can Do podcast is hosted by Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod is Vibe Ace, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks for watching or listening. We hope you'll share the podcast.